So I've been spending a little bit of time lately in the new Hidden Wiltshire headquarters, Paul.
New Hidden Wiltshire headquarters.
We've moved our head office to Heywood House.
Oh, that one.
That stately home on
Yes.
between Westbury and Trowbridge, with views of the sweeping views of the Westbury White Horse and ornamental gardens. It's very posh, I must say.
You had
All
me.
funded by the Hidden Wiltshire shop.
Well, yeah. You had me worried because I thought you were perhaps moving to Liverpool or something. And there's no way I'm driving up there to see you. Well, having visited you in the Hidden Wiltshire Towers,
yes.
I have to admit your conservatory is very impressive.
So, yes, it is very nice. Not, a bit warm, though, isn't it?
It was bloody warm.
Need to turn the heating down in my giant conservatory.
Yes, I'm very tempted to go straight home and have another COVID test. I was coming down with something. So.
You thought you were having a fever.
Yeah.
No.
But as you know, I had one just, I took a test just before I came to see you. So, so it's two in one day felt a bit excessive.
Yeah. Fair enough, fair enough. So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, and we are on number, what number are we at, Paul?
24,
I knew that. Blimey, that's nearly a whole year.
It is.
So yeah, we are coming up to, well, this is sort of mid-November, but we started this in January, and we are still going with our regular schedule of every 2 weeks.
And as I said before, we are professionals because we've done more than seven.
Yes, exactly. We are podcasters.
Yep.
So if anyone out there listening would like a bit of podcast consultancy where we can offer our services to explain how to do this weird and wonderful thing called podcasting, we'd be happy to offer our services.
And we can probably talk about it with a little bit more expertise than we do archaeology and history.
Shh. Didn't you know the trick about archaeology and history is just to know a little bit more
little
about
bit
everybody
more,
else.
Yeah.
Just
on that tack, have you done your talk for the Bratton History Society yet?
No, that's January. That's January.
Okay,
so
right.
I'll plug that in January. Yeah, I'm doing a talk at the Bratton History Association in January on Wiltshire's blind houses. And that's because in lockdown months and months ago when I was a bit bored, I wrote an article on the website about the blind houses in Wiltshire, and it was a bit of a joint effort. So I put the word out in the Hidden Wiltshire community to see if people could send me pics of the various blind houses in their localities, and got quite a few together and wrote some blurb on it. And I still keep learning more things about them as people drop comments. But yeah, that's what I'll be talking about.
Do you know, I only realised yesterday that, I don't know why it's just dawned on me, or why I didn't realise before, but they're called blind houses because they don't have windows.
Yes, that's true. But it's funny though, when you start putting things out there about these things, you get all sorts of weird and wonderful comments from people that have strong views about things. You know, there's been a bit of a debate about whether the blind house on the bridge at Bradford and Avon used to be a chapel or not. And I think I haven't got to the bottom of it yet, but I will do before my talk in January. I think there may have been a chapel on the bridge before it was rebuilt. And that's where the confusions come in. But yeah, there's a few books that have been written about the area, and the sources, you know, refer to the fact that it's a former chapel, but it's definitely a prison cell now. Mm. Well, not now, because they've been decommissioned a long time ago.
No.
But
that would be inhuman.
Yes, yeah. Actually, I've been inside one of those things. I went inside the one at Trowbridge, and it's grim.
Yeah.
Really grim.
I suppose they were meant to be, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But if you were drunk and just shoved in it like a drunk tank on a Saturday night, I don't think you'd care too much. Yeah.
In fact, I've started about nearly halfway through Andrew Zeminski's book, you know, The Stonemason. Mm. And every page is sort of, I learned something. It's an incredible book. But he was talking about some work he did on a the Saxon church in Bradford-on-Avon, which I didn't even know existed. And you presume you've been there, have you?
Yes, many times.
Is it difficult to find?
No, it's really easy to find.
Okay.
It's just over the walkway bridge near. Just go past the swimming pool and beyond there. There's a pedestrian bridge across to the other side. You can see the main Norman church, but just the other side of the road of that is the old. It's this tiny little Saxon church, and it was lost for a while.
That's why I asked, really, whether it's difficult to find.
No, it's fine now because they've in the past it was built around and built on and. They stripped it back, so it is the pure original Saxon building now. But it's fascinating. It's a really nice little church.
Yeah. I'll put that on the list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you'd have come on the Hidden Bradford Avon walk I did a few months ago. Yeah, we did that, the Saxon church. I might do that again, actually, that Bradford on Avon walk, because there was loads to see in that little town. It was fascinating. We even found a little spring halfway up the hill, which was absolutely gushing with water.
Mm.
That spring used to supply Bradford-on-Avon with water. Used to supply the town. That was a while ago now. So just to reference back to Heywood House, I haven't bought it. It's got office space there, and it's only 10 minutes from home, so I kind of use it as a occasional work location. Sit in the conservatory with a coffee and the rest of it. Or I've got a sort of... office desks and stuff where I can sit and do a bit of work. But yeah, nice location.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. Well, I think we talked about it in the last podcast, didn't we, where you could see the poppy on over sort of Eddington Way on the hills above Eddington.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I assume is now gone, is it?
Yeah, it's gone. I looked the other day and it had gone. Yeah.
So what have you been up to then the last couple of weeks?
Oh, God. I've been spending hours on the Hidden Wiltshire book.
Yes.
It's been a bit of a marathon effort, actually, the last couple of weeks, because as it always is, when you sort of crash against a deadline, you just put more effort into it and you keep finding things that you want to tweak and change. And it's hard to find that point in time where you just draw a line and say, no, that's it, we're done.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, really, sort of the number of typos that you and I both missed sort of trawling through it. And, you know, you look at it time and time again, and you think you've got them all, and then there's always another one.
Yeah.
But so we've seen it in print now. We've got a specimen copy in print, which obviously we went through the other day. And for anybody who can't wait to get their copy, I think we're going to push the button on ordering them this weekend, aren't we? If not today.
Yes, I'll probably do it today. And fingers crossed they'll be here early December. Yep. So that we can... Well, I guess we'll communicate this in more detail in the days to come, but we're going to have a bit of a special book launch event in early December.
Yep.
And we'll just leave that there for now.
Yep.
Don't want to spoil a surprise.
So apart from working in the book, you've done nothing really, have you?
I've been very lazy, very lazy indeed. But I'll probably go out this weekend for a long walk. I was planning to get out on Sunday, weather permitting. What about you? What have you been up to?
Apart from the book, a lot of stuff, Natural England stuff, you know, put the parsonage down and beyond. So we're busily, they're trying to get us volunteers more sort of independent now so that we haven't got to be supervised all the time. And Natural England being part of DEFRA and therefore a government body, health and safety is very near the top of their agenda. So we have to get what they call tickets for pretty much everything we do. We have to go off and be trained and get a certificate to say you can work a strimmer or a chainsaw. One of the better courses I went on last week, three of us were sent up to do 4x4 sort of off-road driving training. So we had to go to a place up near Cirencester, as it turned out. I thought it was going to be on Parsonage Down, but we ended up having to drive to Cirencester at some godly hour. And got some training there. and it was fascinating, really. It was just done on a guy's farm, a guy who's sort of been training and competing sort of off-road. I think he did the Paris-Dakar rally years ago. But that was fabulous. But we spent all morning literally classroom-based, so teaching us all about the sort of the technical bits and the mechanics and what's going on when you engage sort of high ratio and low ratio. And we had to collect two vehicles from Parsonage down and drive those up there. And because of sort of COVID restrictions, the guy wasn't allowed in the vehicle with us. So we had to take our own vehicle. So I drove the old Land Rover Defender that we use up at the reserve, and I drove it up there. And when I set off, I'm looking at the dashboard and I think, there's this strange amber light on the dashboard. And for those that are old enough to remember cars that had manual chokes, it looked like a choke light to me. And I thought, where the blimmin' heck's the choke on this thing? Surely it hasn't got a manual choke. And I spent all the way up there, not all the way, but I kept looking at this light saying, why don't it go out? And how do I turn the choke off? When I got there and we're going through the training, and I mentioned this yellow light to this guy, and he said, well, did you notice anything odd about the steering on the Land Rover? And I said, well, nothing really unusual. I said, it felt a bit odd. He said, well, you've just driven up here with the diff lock engaged all the way, which basically, you know, makes it very difficult to go around corners. but in my defence, it wasn't me. It was whoever used the vehicle before me, and I know who that person was. He'd forgotten to turn the diff lock off. Hopefully I've not done any lasting damage to the old Landy.
Oh dear, you might have wrecked it.
Well, God, I hope not. I don't think so. Well, actually, I say I hope not. I was up at the reserve yesterday, and we were doing some coppicing, and the Land Rover was sort of, it wasn't so much parked in the farmyard, but abandoned. It was just sort of askew. And our boss up there said, oh, it's broken down. And I thought, oh, God, no. But it was actually him that left the diff lock engaged, so it's his fault.
Yeah.
But he had to push it across the field on his own into the farmyard the day before. I mean, they're blooming heavy, these things. So God knows how he managed that. It's incredible. So it just sort of freewheeled to a halt outside the offices up there.
Oh, dear.
But yesterday was sort of probably a bit more pertinent to Hidden Wiltshire and what we talk about, because the coppicing we were doing was in a just a small copse behind the farmyard, and basically we were taking out a lot of dead trees and trying to clear the sort of understory with the view to planting new trees and sort of make basic clearing understory, letting light into the wood. But it was really quite sort of telling, and we talked about it, I think, in relation to the Clumps podcast. A lot of the trees that were dying were, you know, the big beech trees, ash, of course. Some of them, pretty much all will have to come down at some point, but some had already died. A lot of elder, and it just shows, you know, to the point that we were making in the Clumps podcast and the blog, that, you know, woodlands have to be maintained, and this one hasn't been maintained, and pretty much, you know, most of what's in there was just dead or dying.
Yeah, that's very true. They do have to be managed. It's funny, because I remember a few years ago, I had a romantic idea of buying a woodland, because I kept driving into Bath through the road Sally in the Woods, and there used to be a sign up there saying woodland for sale. And I had this notion of just having my own wood, you know, and going out there and lighting fires and showing off generally. But there were two things that put me off. One, when I looked into the cost, I thought, oh, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah.
And secondly, it had a big up, loads of articles on the website about the work involved in managing the wood. And I thought, oh, blimey, I just want a place to go and light a fire.
Yeah.
It's just not feasible.
Do that in the garden.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think sort of buying woodland is for the sort of person who has an offshore bank account in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not me.
No,
I hasten to add.
Not for the likes of us.
No. Okay. Anything else, or should we press on?
No, I was going to mention my little foray out to Downbarn Cottages, but Anybody who's looks at the Facebook site and Facebook group, I'm sure they've seen all that, so there's no need to talk about it here. But yeah, it was pretty amazing evening or late afternoon. The light was just really spectacular.
Yeah, the photos look really amazing.
Well, it didn't really do it justice, as I said in the article. It's, I took the wrong camera with me because I was expecting to take completely different photographs, so I needed a longer lens. Yeah. Actually, going out there again, possibly this afternoon, to there's some, I shan't say where, but there's some short-eared owls have been spotted out on the plain. So
yeah.
I'm going out with a guy I used to do bird surveys with, Rich, to see if we can spot one and, more importantly, photograph one with his humongous lens. And I'll hold his coat whilst he does the photography. But
fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, really.
Okay, so we can launch into this week's topic, which is the River Till. Okay, so this week we're going to cover a topic which you know more about than I do, Paul, which is the River Till. That's over in your neck of the woods.
That's right. And I was, before I launched in, I suddenly occurred to me, I did an article about it and put it, a blog on the website, and it's just called The River Till, The Story of a Winterbourne. And I can't remember when I did it. It was earlier this year, I know.
Yeah, it was January, I think.
Yeah.
January this year.
The Tilshead, which is a village up the A360 from Shrewton, this is the next village up the valley, which you would think, you know, Tilshead gets its name from being where the Till rises, but apparently not. It's not related. But the Parish Magazine, which is called, which is a great publication, and it's really done, you know, very economically, shall we say, the Tilshead newsletter, The Voice of the Village, they actually reproduced that blog that I wrote in their, hear me rustling papers here, and I'm looking at it, the March 2021 edition, edition number 233. So they reran it. And because they produce this thing on a pretty tight budget, you know, it's quite a weighty tone. But there's a lot of content in this thing. But it's all black and white, so all my photographs are in black and white. Whereas you know, go onto the blog, and most of them are in colour. And they just staple it together. It's brilliant. I mean, that's all you need to do.
Yeah.
Whereas the Shrewton Parish Magazine, which was a more lavish affair, you know, sort of full colour and glossy paper, was very expensive to produce, and at the moment it's not being produced at all.
Yeah.
But little old Tilshead with their 500 people or whatever managed to knock this thing out.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah.
It's a great thing. Acquired or attained or whatever the word is, a degree of either fame or notoriety for my article, because the Tilshead Parish Magazine is also sort of widely distributed in Shrewton. So the co-op had it, and the garage, and Billy Baxter the butcher had it. And in fact, so my wife walked into the butcher's sometime after, and they were all talking about my article. We said, oh, he's Julian. And apparently some of the old boys had disputed some of the facts that I'd put in there. And I'm happy to say they were completely wrong and I was right. But
yeah. There you go. You've become famous in Shrewton.
Famous in Shrewton, yeah. Amongst the people who shop in Billy Baxter's at the butcher. And by the way, we're not sponsored, but Billy, if you ever listen to this, you know, we're open to offers. So.
Yeah, exactly.
This is this was following a walk that I had done with Stu and I did a walk, and we sort of wandered up to Tool's Head, which is where the River Tool rises, and we walked sort of the area between Tool's Head and Shrewton on the plains, and we'd also separately we walked from Shrewton all the way down to Stapleford, where the Till joins the River Wylye.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like two walks, and it's there were two circular walks, but to do the whole you could do it as a day walk, an A to B walk rather than a circular walk. You could go from where the river rises down to where it joins the Wylye.
Yeah.
You could do that, and it'd be quite a long walk, probably one for the summer, but it is possible. But the Till is one of these sort of, you know, very typical, you know, Wiltshire and other counties have them, but a chalk stream, and it rises from a spring somewhere around Till's Head, and the reason why Till's Head probably doesn't get its name from the River Till is that the Till did used to be known as Water Lake, or the Water Lake.
Mm.
And that is a name that sort of exists today, which we'll come on to, and it can be found. There's a Water Lake Lane in Alderston, which is right next to the Till, which we'll talk about in a bit.
So does that mean Till's Head probably got it? Well, the Till and the River Till got its name from Till's Head rather than the other.
No,
way
no, I don't. I think they're unrelated.
Or is it just a coincidence?
Because Till's Head is for starters, is spelt with one L.
Yeah.
Whereas the Till is two L's. And I did read the origins of the name Till's Head some time ago when I first wrote this, and I've completely forgotten. So perhaps somebody can tell me.
Hang on, I've got it here. Look at me, I'm the expert.
God, you've got
Google's
great,
isn't it?
You've got two screens as well.
Yeah, it says the name of the settlement derives from Theodwulf's hide.
Mm.
In 1086, Tidolva's hide, or Tidolithide, was a borough and large royal estate, with a large population of 164 households and 9 mills.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
It's so, Saxon.
Saxon, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was. It appears in the Domesday Survey, which is 1086.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I, as you know, I was up over Till's Head Way a few months ago looking at the long barrows one evening. And one thing I noticed when I was walking, because I parked by the water tower and walked across, I noticed just past the water tower there were these, like, quite clearly ornamental tree clumps, you know, all the way along. And it made me think, well, clearly there was something grand here at some point.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's the old grounds of Till's Head Lodge.
Till's Head Lodge, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which has now been knocked down, but at one point it was quite a grand house.
Yeah, and, you know, the guy who seems to pop up in every podcast, Richard Colt Hall, was a resident at Till's Head Lodge at some point. I don't think he owned it, but... Till's Head Lodge was sort of in the area around that water tower, which you can find on the Till's Head to Chittan Road. You're not supposed to park by the water tower. There's a big sign there saying it's MOD land. You can park the other side of the road, but you're not supposed to go.
Yeah, there's a big car park the other side of the road, so there's no need to park.
No, absolutely. I mean, people do, and, you know, I've pulled in there, but there's big signs saying, you know, it's MOD, keep out, sort of thing. But yeah, you're right. It does look like a country park. And it seems a bit odd without the country house. But where those... so you've got three long barrows up there. So you've got... One of them's called Till's Head Lodge, which I think is on the north side of the Till's Head to Chittan Road.
Yeah.
And you've then got... what's the long one called? Old Ditch Barrow, which is just sort of beyond that car park where the water tower is. You sort of
is, go, that, is that the really long?
Yeah,
long
yeah. So you I go mean, down. So from that car park by the water tower, you sort of descend into a little bit of a valley, which
yeah,
actually
do, yeah.
it's thought is a re-entrant for the River Till. So, you know, millennia ago, the River Till, the water table would have been higher, and it would have sort of, you know, the re-entrant would have been there. And also the other side of the little ridge. And the other side of the little, so you've got the water tower, the little dip, the little valley, and then up to a ridge. And on that ridge is Old Ditch Barrow. And it's supposedly I think it is the longest long barrow in Wiltshire. But I read yesterday, the day before, that it's actually the longest, or thought it's the longest long barrow in England.
Right.
So it's pretty significant. And as I wrote in the blog, it's been covered in sort of like fencing, wire fencing, basically to stop the badgers sort of digging it all up, because I think it was getting quite eroded. But that long barrow, Old Ditch Barrow, is sort of along the line of an old, what is called Old Ditch on the maps. So it's an earthwork, great big long earthwork that goes all the way along that ridge there. And then the other side of that ridge, again, you're sort of heading south towards Troute, and there's another valley, another re-entrant. And just beyond that, you've got the third of the three long barrows up there, which is called White Barrow.
Yeah.
And White Barrow's a lovely spot. I think it's the National Trust of... I don't know if they own it or manage it or whatever.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
But it's not a very big barrow, but it's a beautiful spot. It's, you know, in the spring with the wildflowers. It's a place I quite often go and sort of sit up there. Although the last time I went up there in the spring, I ended up with ticks. So
yeah, that's the thing with you.
Beware ticks.
You're really prone to ticks for some reason. I don't know.
Tick magnet, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, probably best to wait until I've been up there and I've attracted all the ticks and then go up there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's sort of the area where the River Till rises, and as the title of the blog says, it's a winterbourne. So for long chunks of the year, the valley is dry, and certainly it's dry at the moment. And friends of mine who work at the reserve at Parsonage Down, they have a well in their garden, and so they know when the water table is rising. And they said that it's still, you know, the well's 20 foot deep and it's still dry.
Yeah.
And they sort of there's another well up around sort of Till's Head Way, which they keep an eye on to see when the river's rising, and it's still very, very low. Which I think, you know, if you look back over this year and you think, well, Blimineck, it rained a lot, but, you know, not enough for the Till to rise yet. So that whole valley is still dry. And as it sort of travels down, if you were to go to Orchestown, which is just on the outskirts of Shrewton, if you were to drive along the A360, the River Till, or the course of the Till, runs right next to the road. So if you're travelling from Till's Head to Shrewton, the Till would be on your left. And, you know, I travel up and down there a lot. And at the moment, again, that is still dry. But when it's in spate, the sort of the meadows there, they're sort of... I don't know about flood, but it even though it's a very, very shallow stream bed, it does do quite a good job of just sort of containing it. The meadows have been flooded there. I've seen it flooded over the years, but less so these days.
So just one thing that springs to mind is there's quite a few of these winterbournes around Salisbury Plain. Now, I'm no geographer, but is that to do with the actual chalk, in the sense that it acts as like a soak, a sponge almost for the water, and then it.
I think chalk is very porous, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it does sort of soak through, and what is it? So it's the underlying. Well, is it clay? It's clay on top, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's clay and then chalk. And then a lot of flint. But yeah, I mean, it's basically the what appears in the till is the rain that's fallen on Salisbury Plain, you know, probably, you know, 100 years ago or however long it takes for it to rise. So it's, you know, I guess it is, you know, a great sink, is a great, you know, acts as a great sink, and eventually the ground becomes so sodden that it rises and, you know, bubbles up to the surface.
Yeah.
Just like it does with, you know, with the river, you know, the Nadder, the Ebble, you know, and well, there's five chalk streams, and they're chalk rivers that flow into Salisbury, as we know. You know, the five rivers. But Orchestone's a sort of interesting sort of point for the till and its journey. When I wrote the blog initially, there's a chap called Jeremy Naylor, who's an equine vet who lives, I don't know if he lives there, but certainly his practice is sort of on the edge of sort of between Orchestone and Shrewton, I think. And Jeremy he certainly follows the Facebook page and the blog, because he commented on my blog. And he said, you know, if you ever get a chance to update it, you might want to mention what I'm about to tell you. So I thought this was a great opportunity to actually say, you know, repeat what Jeremy said. And apparently, and he found this in on the Wiltshire Council sort of history part of the their website, which is very, very good. And there's some great sort of, you know, history of Wiltshire in there. Yeah. And you've got this sort of water meadows in Shrewton, one of which is next to this Water Lake Lane that I mentioned, and it's right next to there's a campsite in Orchestone. And Jeremy was saying that the grasses, or the grass that grew in this meadow, the soil was so rich, and because of the, you know, the flooding from the river, the grass would grow between 17 and 18 feet in a year. So that's not to say that the grass was 17 or 18 feet tall, but it meant that each year they got two crops out of it for hay. So they mow the grass, and they'd the first crop would be in May, and then the second crop would be sort of late July, early August, something like that. But it grew at such an incredibly prodigious rate. And this was, you know, we're talking about the late, the 17th century. They allowed it to grow like this, and they would mow it probably with scythes. I guess they would have mowed it with scythes. But I was looking at the sort of the grasses that grow there, and, you know, you've got sort of broad clover, which I think we all know, ray grass, which I'd never heard of, trefoil, and something called black medic, which is also called nonsuch, which I didn't realise. So these are all these grasses, and because of the combination of the soil and the water, which of course raises the temperature of the ground, you know, this grass would just grow like crazy. So that's something I knew about, but the stream historically, and even in the time that I've lived here, has always been sort of prone to flooding. And I think the water meadows, you know, they used to make use of that, those properties. And of course, in 1841, there was a terrible flood in Orchestone and Shrewton. And you know, there's a picture on the blog of cottages next door to my house. Actually, they're called flood cottages, and there's a plaque on the wall, and it talks about the 1841 flood, and there are marks on buildings as to how high it rose, the river rose. And if it were to do it again, it would be up to the bedroom I'm sitting in now recording this, which is on the first floor of our house.
Yeah, it's funny, as you were saying flood cottages, I had to chuckle, because I thought, I bet that's an interesting event for them when they try and get insurance.
Insurance, yeah.
Yeah, well, what was the name of your house? Flood Cottage.
Yeah.
It's got a great big plaque on the walls.
Well, fortunately, it's owned by a housing association, so the people,
right, okay,
people who rent them, don't. It's not a problem. Well, they're contents insurance, I suppose.
But, yeah, yeah.
Although years ago, I changed our our house insurers, and I did have some explaining to do as to, you know, because they ask you the flooding question and is there a river course near your house? And I said, yeah, it's in my garden. The River Till's in my garden. Has it ever flooded? Well, in 1841.
Yes.
But of course, you know, the insurance companies all have access to you know, flood maps now, and guy I was talking to looking at it said, yeah, it's not a problem. So basically, if it reaches your house again, we're all in trouble. So, going back to sort of Water Lake and Water Lake Lane and those meadows in Orchestone, this is something that I know you and I have sort of talked about this in the last few days. There's been a lot of sort of trouble, a lot of discussion, a lot of quite a heated debate about the fact that, you know, the river doesn't flood like it used to. And people talk about, you know, is Wessex Water over-extracting? But one thing that is happening, and it's very sort of topical at the moment, especially in the last couple of weeks, is that there's been a guy who works at the Nature Reserve with me lives on Water Lake Lane. So he looks out over this meadow. And over the last few months, he's been sort of talking about the fact that it's almost dead, that there's just nothing growing on that water meadow now. And basically it's the storm drains from the campsite, which when they overflow, it just pumps into this meadow. It just overflows into the meadow. And of course that includes sewage from the campsite. And it's a busy little campsite. And this guy from the reserve who lives there, I was talking to him yesterday about it. I said, you know, is it still a problem? He said, yeah. He said, nothing's changed. He said, you know, we're talking to Wessex Water. We've reported Wessex Water to the Environment Agency. Environment Agency get Natural England involved. And, of course, the reserve where we work is Natural England. Because Natural England, it's a triple SI. Natural England are the agency that enforces the protection of triple SIs. And, you know, God forbid, it hasn't killed it completely, but you know, John just said it's completely sterile at the moment. There's just nothing growing there.
Yeah, I mean, this has been such a topic over the last couple of weeks about contamination of our watercourses and the damage it can do to the chalk streams and the coastline. About the fact that the water companies, through underinvestment, have this almost like a license to dump sewage during storms. So the where I found out about Shrewton is there was an article in the Times early November, and the article was entitled "Sewage Dumped in Rivers for Months on End," which gives you a flavour of you know, the stench of this article.
Yeah.
But partway through it said, between July 19 and June 2020, the Shrewton treatment works operated by Wessex Water spilt for 5,110 hours, or more than 7 months, into the River Till, another highly vulnerable chalk stream.
So that treatment works is just outside the village. So anybody who knows Shrewton, there's a one of the old Shrewton is a relatively new name, and it was I think five different parishes at one point, one of which was Rolston, and there's a beautiful little church at Rolston, just on the southern edge of the village, and the sewage treatment works is just the other side of the valley from it, and in fact it's the entrance to it is on my road as you go out of the village towards Winterpont Stoke, and that's just, and again in the article that I wrote I've got some photographs of the sluice gates, and there are two sluices, one of which is in better condition than the other, and the one that's in sort of half decent. Well, there's more evidence of it, is right next to the sewage treatment works. So there's a pipe that comes from that treatment works into the Till and then flows through this, what was a sluice. And it's a beautiful spot. I mean, you know, in fact, during the summer, I went down there and there was a lady was down there with a couple of kids and they were playing in the river. And you think, and I didn't, what you've just read out, I didn't know how bad it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, those children would have been playing in a river that was, you know, polluted from the treatment works 50 metres away.
Yeah.
But it flows all through there, and there's photographs in the article. I mean, it's an absolutely stunning spot, and the bird life through there is beautiful. But to know that that's being, you know, this sewage being, you know, allowed to flow along there is shocking, really. But when you look at it, you wouldn't know. You haven't got, you know, unpleasant things floating around in the stream, not like you have in devices in the canal.
Yeah.
The new housing estate where Steve Dixon lives, he backs onto the canal. You know, Steve Dixon, who does the music for this podcast, I mean, he backs onto the canal. On the other side, there's a new housing estate. And even this new housing estate, they built it so that the overflow from the storm drains tips into the canal.
Yeah.
And he was saying to me the other day, he said, you should see the stuff that's floating in the canal. So anyway, perhaps, you know, time to end that rant, but it is such a shame to spoil a spotlight. And sorry, I'm not going to finish the rant there. I think what's happened is what people perhaps forget is that they haven't, you know, the government just hasn't just allowed this to happen. Basically, they've not put in any measures to stop it happening. It's been happening for years. You know, what they were supposed to be doing was ending the practice, or just setting a time frame for it to be, you know, for water companies to, you know, basically fix the problem. So they put this amendment on the bill, which basically says, you know, they, after the uproar, you know, they have to show progress towards remediation. But it's not, you know, it's not measurable, and it's not time bound.
No, which makes it very worthless, to be honest.
It seems to be very easy to wriggle out of, but
yeah, it's a bit of a crisis, and I know we try not to get into politics on this podcast, but and this isn't a partisan statement I'm going to make, but I think we just have to bear in mind that, you know, the water companies could have invested to try and deal with this over the last, I don't know how many years since privatisation. But, you know, what they have done is they've extracted £57 billion in cash to pay in dividends. And you just wonder, you know, how do you change the system so that you can force these companies to, you know, divert the money into where it's needed, which is investing in the infrastructure that they need to stop this kind of thing happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, if you're taking a utility like that out of public ownership and into the private sector, then, you know, companies are going to expect a return, and shareholders expect dividends, and you're just diverting money away from where it needs to go. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you and I, well, I know from my previous life, and you know from your present one, that, you know, it's a director's duty is to, you know, maximise the return for shareholders. But, you know, surely that includes the longer term as well. And, you know, it's not just for the next quarter. It has to be, you know, for the long term.
Yeah.
And, of course, a lot of our water companies are owned by, you know, foreign states. So, to all intents and purposes, they've not been privatised. They're in public ownership, just not British public ownership.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's enough of that.
Yeah, but it's a problem. I mean, this is a real stain on our landscape, really.
And especially, you know, with chalk streams that we have, and I mean a bit further down, and the sort of the music intro to this section, we've used it before quite recently, but Steve's piece called When Swallows Rise, and the reason I sort of chose that one was because just a little bit further down from that sluice I mentioned, there's another set of, there was another sluice gate, and there's a little stone bridge where I spend hours just sitting there, you know, I have spent hours sitting there over the years, just sort of dangling my legs over the bridge, and then the river is just a few feet, you know, the till is a few feet below, and it's a place where I just sit and watch the swallows buzzing around there. It's just absolutely idyllic, and you're not very far from the A303, but it seems to, you know, it's sheltered from the noise, and it's just very peaceful, and all you could hear is, you know, the sort of the birds twittering away, and it's just stunning. And then, you know, just looking just 100 meters away, you've got the second set of sluices, And of course, you know, again, something I've mentioned before, this whole landscape would have been very closely managed by the keepers who who managed the sluices, and these were people in the sort of, you know, early 19th, late 18th centuries, who would sort of travel around, and they would know exactly when to open the sluice gates and flood the meadows. And of course, you know, it gave the meadows a bit of a head start, because I said before, the, you know, the water is warmer. So you flood the meadows, you heat the ground up a little bit earlier in the season. You know, the grass grows. You know, the sheep used to graze there, so, you know, their job was to fertilise the ground. The grass would grow, and then they would turn cattle out onto it. So it was all about, you know, rearing cattle. So very, very traditional landscape. And again, sort of, you know, sitting where I do with my legs dangling over the stream, just off to your right, you've got a feature called the Conega, if you look it up on a map, which is a sort of it's described as a round barrow cemetery. So there are something like, as I said in the blog, 8 bowl barrows, 3 disc barrows, 2 pond barrows, and a source barrow, all in that little area on the side of a hill. And it's not a very big area. And it goes back to, Bronze Age through Iron Age. Roman pottery has been found there. I found Roman pottery there. And again, it's a sort of beautiful little spot, just to sort of sit there and, you know, just soak in all that history. So you can follow the course of the till, and, you know, crisscrossing it as you go, all the way down to Winterbourne Stoke itself, and it sort of wends its way through there. And the walk that I usually do is to sort of basically take to the hills, to the east of Winterbourne Stoke. So you're sort of gaining height, and basically you're heading for Druid's Lodge. So as you gain height, you're looking down into the Till Valley. You can actually follow the river through past the church to Winterbourne Stoke, and across the meadows towards Berwick St James, and that's quite often I sort of come back that way to sort of take that in. And again, you've got sort of water meadows just by the church in Winterbourne Stoke. I normally go out one way, come back the other. But I do like the stretch, Druid's Lodge. Druid's Lodge was a very famous sporting estate. And in the days when hare coursing or hunting hares with dogs was legal, people came from all over the country to hare hunting events at Druid's Lodge. It's very famous for its hares. And sadly now it's very famous with the coursing community, who just plague Druid's Lodge. Even recently there was a case reported around here. I mean, it was just caused absolute carnage up there. But the views you get up there are just spectacular, as we so often see in Wiltshire. So you're heading along. It's basically a metalled road that goes all the way from the A303 and heads towards the Druid's Lodge estate and the farm buildings. And you walk for probably at least two, three miles along that road, just looking down across, you know, the woods and the Till Valley below. And the last time I did it, one of the last occasions, Stu and I did that walk, and we walked along that metalled road, and we were heading for Stapleford, which is at the end of the Till Valley, basically because I wanted to do that sort of last section, because I've walked the bit to Berwick St James many times, as often as not, to go to the Boot, the pub in Berwick, but also the brilliant farm shop in Berwick, which, you know, I can thoroughly recommend. but so we'd never really got any further than Stapleford, than Berwick. So I wanted to get onto Stapleford, because of course in Stapleford you've got, which I didn't even know existed until last year, the site of Stapleford Castle, which is where Jane Seymour, Henry VIII's father, lived. So he owns Stapleford Castle. I didn't even know it was there, and it's a sort of medieval ringwork and bailey castle, and you can just about make out the earthworks, but it's covered in trees now, and you can't get to it. It's sort of on private land, but you can definitely see the earthworks. And I think, you know, if you go and ask the farmer who owns it, I do know people who've been allowed to go in and have a look. And I don't think there's an awful lot to see, but it's just sort of incredible, really, to think that, you know, Jane Seymour's father has sort of connections there, Henry VIII has connections there. And I was trying to remember what it is. There was another connection with Jane Seymour's father. I think, it was in relation to... when Stu and I went out to Recce, the walk at Hip and Scombe and around there. God, my memory's terrible. The village, the church where we parked. Come back to me in a minute. But when we parked up there, again, there's a connection with Jane Seymour's family, which we saw in the church there. So that's pretty much kind of the end. That's where the valley ends, and that's where the River Till joins just the other side of the A36. I think it sort of tips into the River Wylie. I think the debate that was going on in Billy Baxter's shop, where the old boys were saying he's wrong. They reckon that the people there reckon that the River Wylie starts at Winterbourne Stoke, which it patently doesn't. So it does continue all the way down into the River Wylie at Stapleford. So that's kind of like your turning point. So if you wanted to make a sort of a walk of it, a long walk. So it is a long walk to go from Shrewton down to Stapleford and then back to Shrewton. And you could go either sort of back up the river, but again, you can't get very close to it. A lot of it is flows through private land, but the path does sort of come back down to the river on the edge of Berwick St James. But another way of doing it is actually to sort of stay up high and stay up on the ridge to the west of the Till Valley. And a good way of doing it is to actually to go into Berwick and pop into the farm shop and then climb the ridge and basically wend your way back towards Shrewton via Yarnby Castle. So up there, of course, you're following one of the ancient, very old sort of ridgeways that crisscross Wiltshire. I think I'm going to back myself into a corner here. You're going to have to help me out, which ridgeway that is. Steve Dewey could tell us, but there are milestones dotted all the way along it, and the track continues, crosses the A303, past Yarnby Castle.
I think it's
the old Sarum to Bath? No.
I think, didn't he cover that in the old slow coach
he
road?
He did, yeah.
It all links up, because it goes from there and goes all the way across the plain and comes out by Eddington.
Yes,
And carries on towards Bath.
Because you get there's quite a big junction of routes just at the top end of Parsonage Down, so that you get this byway that sort of passes between Yarnby Castle and Parsonage Down, and there's a byway there, and you get to a junction where there's about two or three different tracks sort of branch off, and one of them continues in the direction of Chitton and goes along the edge of the landing strip at Deptford Down.
Yes, I know that one.
Which is great for military plane spotters and helicopter spotters. Yep. But it's a long old walk. I mean, from Shrewton down to Stapleford and back up. I mean, just that bit alone was 12 miles, I think.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you tack on the other bit from Shrewton up to Tooleshead and back round. I think that was I think the way Stu and I did it, we managed to do another 12 miles.
A bit of a marathon.
Yeah, you could do it point to point, though.
And
I don't know how long that would be. I guess about 15 miles in all, something like that, if you just did a straight line.
Mm.
But that's a bit of a canter through. I mean, you know, the blog, there's quite a lot more detail.
And some great pictures.
And, there's some photographs in there. I've sold one or two of those as well. But, yeah, it's a beautiful little stream. It's not unique. There are others like it in Wiltshire and other parts of the country. But for those...
But I think it's the journey it takes, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you follow it through the landscape and you see what's along the way, the views... Mm. The hills, the earthworks, it's just a nice place.
And more recently, the churches. I mean, there's, you know, as small as Orchestone is, I mean, it's got two churches and pretty grand, well, grand, but, you know, very nice churches, you know, one of which is no longer in use. But, you know, how such a little village like Orchestone can, you know, why they built two churches there. I've no idea. And of course, back to almost the beginning, and we talk about blind houses. You've got the Shrewton Blind House, which is right next to the Till, where it flows alongside the main road through the village. It comes under the road there, and you know flows along the side of the road, and you've got the blind house right next to it.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. What I haven't done when I did the blog, I didn't put an OS map or a walk route. I could sort of knock one up, but there's so many different variations, it seems a bit pointless, really. I think, you know, if you look at a map, you can see the Till and you can follow it for yourself.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you read the article and had your map next to you on the screen or in front of you on the paper version, you can follow it. You can, because I mean, I've been doing that as we've been talking. I've just been following the routes down, seeing the different options, seeing the things that you're talking about, whether it's the sewage treatment works or the barrows along the way. It's all there.
And of course, you know, Parsonage Down, as I keep mentioning, is on the heights, looking you know, the end of the drive as you go down to the farm is overlooks the Till Valley and the sewage treatment works.
Yes.
Anyway, there you go. I will just plug the book that I frequently do. It's an old book. W.H. Hudson's A Shepherd's Life. Is it Shepherd's Life or Wiltshire Shepherd's Life? But anyway, a lot of what I've learned about the Till and the farming methods around there come from that book.
Yeah, I got a copy of that.
You got it now, have you?
Yeah. Got it online. It was a fiver or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's a great reference book.
Yeah, it's a lovely book.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I guess we can wrap up this week's podcast.
Yep. Right. So, thanks, Steve Dixon again. As I say, when Swallows Rise was the bit in the middle for no other reason than I sit and watch Swallows by the River Till. I think we used it quite recently, three or four episodes ago. What else? I've been talking to Tim at Lower, and I think what we do about the discount code is sort of review it at the year end, because it'll be getting on for the year. And I think the code actually runs out at the end of the year. He set it to the end of 2021. He's made a few sales, people making use of that code. So,
oh, that's good. That's good.
We then have to decide, and certainly, you know, No fewer than he expected, so he's quite happy.
And it's, I think it's good to link up with a local business, because although Lower are a German manufacturer, but I mean, Tim's a distributor in the UK, and they're based in Steve Ashton, which we're always happy to support local businesses. Yeah, so definitely. If any businesses out there are listening to this and would like to be featured or sponsor us, we're always happy to have a chat.
Yeah, we're not proud.
No, exactly.
Actually, I do need I need to talk to Steve about Tim about, and he doesn't know this, but one of the other products that they distribute is AeroPress coffee makers, which I love. Ooh, okay. Great coffee. So perhaps he can do us a discount on AeroPress coffee makers. But they're only about 25 quid to start with. So it's
fine. Ah, okay. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, what else? Yeah, the website for the show notes and links, and of course the online shop, which will be packed with a book if we get them on time.
Yeah, it will be in December.
Yeah.
And the plan is to get them in the shop and out to people before Christmas, so we've all got an opportunity to buy a nice little book for our nearest and dearest.
And I think initially we are just going to be sort of online, aren't we? I think we'll put some in, I won't say where, because that will give the gaff about the launch, but mainly online we'll be selling them.
Yeah, we'll be selling them online, and even if we have to drive these books to your house ourselves, we will make sure that you get them before Christmas.
Yes, well, bear in mind where they're coming from. That could be a long drive.
yeah, exactly. Okay, well, as soon as we have more news, more tangible news on the book, we'll let you know and put the announcements up about what's happening with the launch and how you can buy one and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that's exciting stuff to come ahead in the weeks ahead, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think we're done.
Yep.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Ta-da.